The Holding Court podcast is powered by Fundraising University Ohio. Fundraising University Ohio offers a variety of fundraising efforts that help basketball teams run profitable, effective, and fast-paced fundraisers designed to raise the most money in the shortest amount of time to reach their fundraising goals. Fundraising University Ohio is locally owned and operated, and with their six-step blitz system, will help your team maximize profits. As a former basketball coach himself, Brent Maxwell will sit down and help you pick, plan, strategize, and execute your fundraiser, which will allow you as a coach to devote more time to the other aspects of your program. If you're looking to take your fundraising efforts to the next level, contact Brent Maxwell at bmaxwell@fundraisingu.net or 740-501-8946 to learn more. Welcome to Holding Court, presented by the Ohio High School Basketball Coaches Association. Join hosts Adam Hall and Walt Serrato as they sit down with some of the biggest names in Ohio high school basketball and beyond. This show and all of our shows are available to listen to completely free anywhere that you can find podcasts. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Let's get to it.
Hello, it's Walt Serrato here, and I'm joined by my co-host Adam Hall. And we're excited to be joined by Pam Davis, current head girls basketball coach at Archbishop Hoban High School and soon to be OHS BCA Hall of Fame inductee. Coach Davis, thank you for joining us and welcome to the Holding Court podcast. So Coach, I think it's almost a requirement at this point with our guests that we ask about some of the changes and or potential changes facing our game here in Ohio. Let's start with the RPI system. Your thoughts on it after our first season using it?
Well, we were the beneficiary of RPI because we were the number one seed overall. And so we knew exactly where we were going to be the entire season, as did mostly everybody else, because there wasn't drastic changes throughout the year. I appreciated the fact that the system recognized your efforts on win-losses, but also your opponent's win-loss records, because there are times when coaches don't necessarily do their due diligence and do their homework on other opponents. And so I like that recognition. However, the flip side of that is, it kind of took away like the gamesmanship a little bit. If this team is maybe number four, do I really want to see them in the district semifinals and where would I vote for them? So there some strategy was taken away a tad bit. But overall, I think it's probably the fairest way to rank teams all across the state without any bias.
So Coach, another change coming our way is the division expansion, going from four divisions to seven now. How do you see the change from four to seven playing out?
Well, it definitely gives teams more opportunity to win championships. However, I've never been in any other division other than one. So it's going to be a little bit more of a challenge for me to scout and to get to know those opponents that are going to do that. We're potentially going to drop down to D3. So I have to do a little bit more homework. But, you know, Hoban, for example, we have approximately 400 girls. And Mason down in Southwest Ohio has over 3,000 kids in their high school, which probably half of them are girls. So there is a huge discrepancy as far as enrollment numbers. And even though, you know, private schools do have the competitive balance numbers, we're still going to be a low division.
So Coach, as I've previously mentioned at the top there when we were introducing you, you're about to be inducted into the OHS BCA Hall of Fame here at the end of this month. Have you had a chance to reflect on receiving this recognition and what it means to you?
Well, I am extremely grateful that the committee recognized all of my efforts for the past 33 seasons. But I can tell you that without a great staff and without great players, there are no Hall of Fame awards or recognition. And so I'm extremely thankful for the staff that I've had with me throughout my career. In particular, my husband, who has been my life partner on and off the court. And I'm very thankful and grateful to the parents who entrusted their daughters with me for as long as they have.
Yeah, I think that's something that a lot of people who are maybe on the outside or don't see the day-to-day, there is so much that happens behind the scenes of a high school basketball program that I think goes unrecognized, or those unsung heroes. And definitely sounds like you've had quite a few in your career. And again, congratulations on that tremendous honor there, Coach.
Thank you. There's not too many active coaches that get inducted. So I'm
No, there's not. So Coach, let's go back in time here a little bit. You were a standout player, Austintown Fitch, and you went on to play at the University of Akron, you know, where you were an All-American while holding the program record for rebounds. And correct me if I'm wrong, currently second place all-time on the all-time scoring list?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, all right. No small feat. You know, something else special happened in those days for you as a Zip. You know, you briefly mentioned your husband, but let's talk about that. You know, you met your future husband and a staple of your coaching staff, Willie. What do you remember about how you two met?
Well, he's a couple years older than I was when we met in college. He played football for the University of Akron, and he was a wide receiver at the time. And, you know, he was a pretty big man on campus at the time. And we had a mutual friend, Susan, who introduced us because she was dating a friend of Willie's. And we kind of just clicked. And even though he was a couple years older, you know, and we didn't have the same major at the time, we had that athletic component as a common goal. And I liked his competitive nature. I'm assuming that he liked mine, and sparks kind of flew from there. And we got married a few years later.
Do you remember where the first date was?
I think we went to Dairy Queen, actually. We were poor college kids at the time.
Nothing wrong with that.
And we enjoyed just a nice, you know, drive, and we both got ice cream.
It's a simple thing, right? Looking back, I'm sure you appreciate the more simple times as life just kind of happens and goes by, and more responsibilities tack on, and that is awesome.
Absolutely. I mean, no cell phones back then, no internet back then. It was all face-to-face communication, so it definitely was a simpler time.
Weren't sending each other Snapchats or text messages or sliding into DMs or anything like that. Just a more simple time that maybe some of our younger listeners just might not quite understand. So Coach, you mentioned it, heading into year 34, coaching together, correct? You and Willie?
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you credit to that longevity on the sidelines together?
Well, I think the most important thing is we're like-minded as far as how we want to run a program, what strategy, player personnel is very important. But I think probably the most thing that kind of defines us is that we leave basketball at basketball, and we have a home life and we have a professional life together, and it's not blurred. Those lines really are not blurred. Now, will we watch film at home? Sure. You know, will we talk about the game afterwards? But we don't ever second guess each other. You know, he's a defensive specialist and I call the offense. You know, if a shot doesn't go in, or I call the wrong play, or maybe the defensive rotation, we never blame each other. We celebrate both wins and losses together.
Let's go back. So, you know, you meet your husband-to-be at the University of Akron, and now your coaching experience is going to start. You started coaching seventh grade at Coventry. What do you recall about those early years? And did you know right away that you had a purpose on the sidelines?
Honestly, I did not. I had completed my student teaching the year before. And the teacher we knew was pregnant with twins, and she wanted me to be her permanent sub for the following year. And so when I turned in my resume to Mr. David Redd, who was the principal at the time, he noticed that I played at the University of Akron. So it was kind of funny that my interview was mostly about basketball because there was a seventh grade job open. Well, I was still playing in an 18 and over league. I was still going to grad school at the time. And I'm like, oh, I don't know if I really want to coach 12-year-old girls. But he convinced me to take the job. I fell in love with them. Willie, on the other hand, was like, oh, I don't know if I want to coach girls either. And we just fell in love with them. They listened, they worked hard. We won right away, which, you know, encouraged that enthusiasm. And I was hooked ever since.
So you work your way up the ranks, you know, from coaching middle school at a smaller school to now leading a major Division I girls program here in Northeast Ohio. You know, what advice would you give to younger, maybe less experienced coaches who are looking to make their mark in the coaching world?
I would say patience. You know, some programs you will win right away because you have that player. More often than not, you have to build your system And it doesn't happen overnight. I think that you also have to have a very supportive coaching staff around you, not yes people, people that are able to provide ideas and feedback, obviously behind closed doors when you have coaching meetings. And then you have to have a life partner that is supportive, because if you're serious about the game, there's going to be some very long nights away from home, and they have to understand and accept that. And in basketball now, it's, you know, pretty much 10 months out of the year that you're doing something with the girls, or even on the boys' side as well. And you have to have that buy-in from everyone.
And being able to strike that work-life balance, like you said, not taking basketball home to the dinner table at night, something that I think all of us as coaches struggle with in some capacity.
Absolutely.
And that's a challenge that'll be there all the time. If you care about what we do, and I assume everyone listening to this right now does care. So not an easy thing to do. So your first head coaching gig then came, like we said, moved up the ranks at Coventry there. You know, what do you recall about a younger coach, Pam Davis? And what are some things you wish you could maybe go back in time and say to that version of yourself?
I would probably say, girl, you're going to be in this for 34 years. You're nuts. But seriously, when I transitioned over to Coventry High School, some of my middle school, you know, players were there. So it was an easier transition than perhaps going to a different high school altogether. I would say my younger self, a lot of my offenses were very simplistic. We didn't have a lot of YouTube videos that you can go and research. You know, running back the TV, you know, WNBA was not there, but even college, you know, we run plays back and forth, say, oh, could this work for us? So it was in the making, just a lot of studying, a lot of research. We have tons of coaching magazines that we looked at, had a lot of subscriptions back then, and just try to fit, you know, what would work with our team. So again, patience is a big thing.
Next stop in your coaching journey, you know, was a school and a community that was pretty familiar with basketball success. And let's be honest, athletic success across the board, as you took on the head coaching job at Barberton High School. And in 2004, you led the Magic to their first state Final Four in 21 years. You know, take us back to your time at Barberton and how you were able to bring that program back to prominence.
Well, it's actually kind of funny because my husband, Willie, was a football coach at Barberton at the time. And we knew that the former coach, Jeff Janaga, was retiring. But I also knew that they lost their top six varsity players. And I was worried that maybe the cupboard was bare. But they were building a new school in 2000. And just a lot of things kind of came together. And, you know, we really had a lot of, you know, everybody says buy-in. You know, the kids have to buy in. But my kids, you know, they lifted when lifting was not necessarily the thing to do. We conditioned out on the track. We did a lot of old school things. And one of my better players that I had was Shayna Andrus. And she was a 5'11 phenom at the time. And she came on the scene as a junior with no recognition as a freshman sophomore and became a first team All-State performer. And I think really from there kind of took off.
So coach, then you take over a very storied Lady Bulldogs program at Canton McKinley. In your 13 years there, we got to go through these numbers, and I'm going to try to say them slowly so our listeners can kind of process. A pretty impressive resume for the Lady Bulldogs with you. In 13 years, you went 278-54. You had 10 seasons of 20 plus wins, 9 district titles, 6 Federal League titles. And I want to put a note here, you know, growing up in Stark County, Northeast Ohio, the Federal League, and I'm sure our listeners from around the state, I think it's one of the toughest leagues in the entire state. There are no off nights in that league. Like I said, 6 Federal League titles, 3 regional titles, and all of which was highlighted by a Division I state title in 2010. You know, when you took that program over, what were some of those pillars that you wanted to build the program on that led to that high level of sustained success that you ended up achieving?
Well, when I accepted the Canton McKinley job, it was pressure because they expect you to win there. And I'm like, okay, where do we start? And we really basically started at the grassroots. We got very, very involved with youth. We had developed youth leagues for the girls in Canton City. We had multiple youth camps as well to try to hone in their skills. We pluck kids from the hallway that are 6 foot tall. Like, why aren't you playing ball? And getting them to come, you know. And after all that behind the scenes kind of thing, we really instilled discipline and a hard work ethic. And probably one of the crazier things that we did is that we introduced them to CrossFit circuit training. And we did lifting twice a week there on the circuit. And I really felt that that helped with injury prevention. Back, you know, in the mid-2000s. And then also we had a wonderful supportive Canton community, the superintendent, the principals, you know, my immediate supervisors in the athletic department. They allowed us to coach up these kids and have high expectations, and the kids rose to that.
Coach, I got to follow up on the CrossFit. I did not see that coming. Whose idea was that? Because CrossFit tends to be kind of a polarizing idea, I think, in the strength training community. What was it like that first time with the girls when you said, hey, this is what we're going to do today? You know, we're going to be flipping tires or whatever it might be, or climbing ropes. I know CrossFit's a different challenge all in itself, but how did that come to be? Unpack that a little for us.
Well, again, I can credit my husband, Willie, because he was a CrossFitter. So we implemented a lot of the core strength, undulation ropes, wall balls, you know, step ups, push presses, and we timed them. So there were five stations, and every station was a minute, and they had to rotate. And the first time that we did it, they thought we were crazy. But when they saw the benefits of it, and it did pay off for them, then they were willing to work.
Wait, I wholeheartedly believe, probably just like anything else, if the coaching staff believes in something, the players are more likely to believe in something. Just like if you're trying to run an offense that maybe I'm not quite educated on, or maybe I don't quite believe in this offense, I think the players pick up on that. So if you guys were sold on the CrossFit as a coaching staff, obviously it paid off. So
yeah, you definitely, whatever decisions you make on the court, you have to have confidence. The kids mm-hmm. have to believe in you. They have to say, yeah, this is going to work, and trust in what you say.
Yeah. You have to show that conviction. So take us back to that state championship run in 2010. What are some of your favorite memories from that season?
Well, I had a sophomore phenom in Amherst Alston, who was a two-time Miss Basketball, who eventually played at Ohio State and was a Lady Buckeye and got drafted in the WNBA for the New York Liberty. And now she currently plays overseas. So she came in prepackaged. Her dad did a fabulous job with fundamentals. But Amherst was so versatile that I could play her from the one to the five, even though she was only 5'10". So she was a staple to get our program going. And we won the state title in her second year with the program. But I think one of my favorite memories was that we had a senior by the name of Sydney Penn. She always had this huge, it wasn't an afro, but her hair was very big. And I never knew how she actually got that hairstyle. And we ended up, our staff went into the locker room probably earlier than we normally do in a regional final. And the girls are braiding her hair. And I'm like, why aren't we focused? We have a game to play. This is, you know, do or die to get to the state, you know, championships. And they are all saying, calm down, coach. We're transforming her into the Wild Thing, in the reference to the baseball player. So she went from braids, multiple braids, and then they would take it out, and then they would fluff her hair up, and then she would come out as the Wild Thing. And Sydney was very instrumental. She was my sharpshooter, my three-point shooter.
A quick story. I actually had the opportunity to coach against Amherst Alston when she was in middle school. I believe it was Hartford she went to. And I was the coach at Lake. And we ended up getting beat in the finals by them. And the triangle and two with two on her
yes,
just wasn't effective. And she still torched us for like 30 points and just a phenomenal talent. But nonetheless, these two young ladies were special players, recognized as Miss Basketball in Ohio, a combined five times. You know, what separated them from the rest outside of maybe just a few physical gifts? And I know, you know, in your work at your different coaching stops and then with Legends U, you coach a lot of really, really good players. So what's the separator with those types of kids?
Amherst and Kirsten both had superior elite basketball IQs. They understood the game inside and out. They could watch a play, watch you draw something up, and they would just be able to do it the first time around. Not only what they were supposed to do, but what all the other players on the court had to do at the time. And then they both were very versatile. They could bring the ball up. They could shoot the three. They could play inside. So when someone has a high basketball IQ and versatile, they're dangerous. And both of those young ladies definitely were that for McKinley.
Was that something you had to, you asked them to do? Or was it just kind of innate? Coach, you need me at the three, I'll go play the three. Coach, you need me to bring the ball up, I'll bring the ball up. Coach, you need me to go, you know, go down the post and push them around, I'll do that too? Or was it they would just do it and they just knew?
I think it was an understood assignment based off of our opponents. I know one time we were playing, Hoover in a district final, and I know that they were, you know, ready for her to play the four. This is Kirsten. And first play of the game, she brought the ball up and they were like, what are we supposed to be doing here? So, you know, anything that I asked those two to do, they definitely did. But they had great supporting cast as well. They could not win all those games by themselves. And they were a very good teammate. Amorous, there one time we were playing a school in the district semifinals, and she had the opportunity to be Stark County's all-time leading scorer. And she deferred on three assists in a row, and we were, the margin of victory was very large. And I said, well, if you aren't going for the record, then I'm just going to go ahead and have you sit down. And she's like, well, I want my teammates involved. It's just not all about me. So that's the kind of kid she was. And, you know, Kirsten was a little bit more dynamic, but she can also assist. She had done a behind the back half court pass when we played Maslin to Kyla Foster and laid it in. It was just like phenomenal. So those are two very vivid memories for me about those two.
So Coach, in 2019, you decided to take your coaching talents up 77 North to Akron Hoban. A move at the time, I feel surprised some around the area. What appealed to you about the Hoban job? You know, obviously a different set of challenges being a private independent school.
You know, I'm from Akron. You know, my husband and I have lived here, you know, for 25 plus years. And I've never coached in Akron. It's always been either a suburb in Summit County or down in Stark County. And, you know, I'm more toward the twilight of my career as opposed to the beginning. And we decided, you know, why not coach at home? And so we, you know, they had an opening and, you know, I interviewed with Coach Tim Terrell, who was the athletic director at the time, who's the current football coach at Hoban. I really liked what their vision was, both athletically as well as academically. It's not that I didn't like McKinley. I still love McKinley because I still teach there. So I did not leave completely, but it was just a basketball move.
So Coach, across the state, Division One is loaded with talented teams and coaches. What are some of the things you and your staff are working on to get the Knights their first state title since 1988?
Well, I think one of our weaknesses that we talk about quite a bit, but we're going to implement some more drills, is transition offense. You know, we pressure D, we get easy buckets off of our defense as far as, you know, backcourt lay-ins. But I want us to be able to expand the floor, get some three ball opportunities, maybe hit the rim runner a little bit more. So I know that that's one area that we definitely have to focus. We also want to focus on our depth. So not just the starting five, but can we get bench production, whether that's points or whether that's rebounding? Because I think depth is very, very important. And then it also helps if you have, you know, some injuries now and then. And I like to play an 8 or 9 person rotation. So we're definitely focusing on that 6, 7, 8, 9 kid. And then mental toughness. You know, everybody says, you know, it's 90% mental and 10% physical. And I truly believe that.
Coach, now we'd like to transition to a segment that we call Triple Threat, where we're going to give you three topics and let you share your thoughts, ideas, experiences, and or suggestions with our listeners. The first is this. The well-deserved recognition the women's game is getting at the college and pro level has been special to witness these last couple years. Who are some of your favorite players to watch and why?
Well, I actually have three players that are really close and dear to me. And they were all on the AAU circuit that I coach, had the opportunity. The first person was Rakia Jackson that played at Tennessee. She played for Sports City U, fourth pick of the draft. Kid out of Michigan, you know, for as good as she was coachable, had a very supportive mom. I knew she was going to be special when she left to go on to play. She played at Mississippi State first and then transferred to Tennessee. I was very happy and say, oh my gosh, I know her and coached her. So she was one of the kids. The other two, and they're not kids, they're young women, but the other two players played for the national championship. One was South Carolina's Bree Hall out of Huber Heights. She played for Legends. And then also on the other side for Iowa was the two guard Gabby Marshall out of Cincinnati Mount Notre Dame. And she also played for me in AAU. And so it was kind of nice to be close and personal with that caliber of player and be able to watch them on TV and said, oh, I know that young lady, and good for them.
We probably should give a little special shout out to a two-time WNBA champion who you might know, who's in Las Vegas right now, I believe, Miss Bell, correct?
Yeah.
She's done okay for herself in the WNBA.
She has. And I, you know, love Kirsten's personality. She's an ultimate professional and team player. Mm-hmm. Had the opportunity to go see her play when they played Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And even though she's not getting the time, she understands what she needs because that team is loaded. Let's face it.
Yeah, you have some pretty good players on the depth chart in front of her. There's no shame in that. So hopefully she just keeps grinding and her chance will come.
Yes, and she's playing for Athletes Unlimited, honing in her skills. She played overseas in Australia. To get ready, you know, for the league. And I couldn't be more proud of her. And I know all the McKinley alumni are as well.
All right, Coach. So second topic or second question here. Now, you have over 600 career wins. Is there a favorite or maybe a select few as favorites?
You always have some memorable wins for sure. I think probably in 2009, we won a regional championship versus Twinsburg. On a last second elbow shot from Orlandria Kirksey. And that was very telling because Melina Howard, who played at Maryland, was on the team at 6'4". And so she brought her outside a little bit and was able to, you know, hit that shot. We called that her sweet spot. And everybody went crazy because we played at the Civic Center at the time. And so we had the home court advantage, if you will. I think another one was in 2017 where Kirsten Bell again hit a last second shot in the district final versus Stowe to catapult us into the regionals. That was a very memorable play because we had originally drawn up something for another person and Kirsten looked at us and said, "Really, coach?" And we're like, "Okay, we're going to run her favorite play and see what she can do." And she pumped and then double clutch and hit the shot with like 2.1 seconds left in the game. So that was definitely memorable.
Coach, number three, the biggest difference between playing a state tournament game in Columbus versus playing one in Dayton?
Well, I know for a fact that Columbus is bigger and Dayton is more intimate. But we played in Dayton during a COVID year. So there was even a smaller crowd available with the social distancing and the ticket sales and everything. So I don't really feel that my 2021 team got the true experience of playing in Dayton. However, Willie and I did go to our boys' state games in Dayton as well. And I like the closeness where the fans are close to the, you know, to the court. You can hear people yelling. They're just a great atmosphere. But anytime you get to a state championship, I don't care what venue it is, it's just good to be there.
So, Coach, we have one more question for you. But before we get to that, we just want to thank you again for coming on the show tonight and spending some time with us on the Holding Court podcast.
I appreciate the invite.
Coach, your wealth of experience and perspective has been invaluable to us and our listeners. And you've been commanding the sidelines for quite some time now. You know, that old saying, the more things change, the more they stay the same. It's kind of interesting to consider when we look at how the landscape of coaching high school basketball has changed so much over the last 10 years or so. Between the prominence of AAU, the transfer portal culture that we're kind of in the middle of right now, NIL, division realignment, and so on. It's all enough to make a coach go crazy. What are the core beliefs or principles that you feel transcend time and these circumstances when it comes to impacting our student athletes?
Student athletes are under a tremendous amount of pressure. I call it the ESPN theory, where everybody just wants to see highlights. Nobody wants to see, you know, the grittiness, the closed practices, you know, the 3-hour, you know, film sessions, what have you. So the kids really are, under a lot of pressure to perform. You know, there's scholarship money out there, but then they get kind of in the back burner because of the transfer portal. And I know that college is astronomical now. But with that being said, I really feel that there's a couple key details that, you know, Willie and I live by. And one is to be firm. You have to set your expectations and you cannot waver on those. If we expect you to be at practice on time, you're at practice on time. There's always those individual, you know, circumstances, but no lateness. I think another one is being fair. And fair doesn't necessarily mean equal. It just means that it's fair across the board. And, you know, on the court time, your best player has a little longer leash than maybe somebody that comes off the bench with the same types of mistakes. But you have to be fair. And then I think you have to be consistent. So if you have a discipline policy, that goes with your best player as well as maybe your 15th person on the bench. You have to be consistent across the board. I think the biggest one that the kids and parents want to know is they want you to be transparent with them. Don't lie to the kid. The kid knows if you're not truthful. So do the parents. And if that, you know, is hard on their feelings, it's better to get that out of the way first than to lie or to, you know, embellish something and then it comes back and it bites you later. So if I don't feel a kid is, you know, a Power 5 Division 1 kid, I said, you're not that now, but perhaps if you work harder, you can get there. But at this current level, you're not. And you have to understand that point guards are like 5'10". So if you're a 5'2 point guard, it's hard for you to get a Power 5 offer. And so I think that the good parents appreciate that.
Thanks for listening to Holding Court, presented by the Ohio High School Basketball Coaches Association. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, keep up with us on Twitter and Facebook at OhioBKCoaches, on Instagram at OHSBCA1947, and online at www.oh.nhsbca.org. Until next time.